This is an interview with Adam Norton. It's taking place in Town Hall House. The date is the 19th of December 2008. The project is the Art and Artists in the City of Sydney Oral History Project being done on behalf of the City of Sydney's History Program. My name's Margot Beasley, and Glenn Wallace from City Projects is also present. What's your actual title now, Glenn?
Program Manager, Special Projects.
Thank you.
Brackets, Public Art Strategy.
Thank you. I would have forgotten, that's why I got you to say it on
good.
The
recording. So it's not actually recording. City Projects.
Okay, no, it's much City's more complicated than that. Yeah.
Division, yeah.
Okay, and so we're here to talk to you today, Adam, in a specific way. We want to talk about the Tank Project, which was part of Art and About and part of, I guess, the laneways section of Art and About. Did it have By George was meant the laneways. Art and About having been a project of the City of Sydney, of public art, with many different strands to it, but a number of events took place in laneways. And that was shorthand for that was By George.
That's right.
Yeah. But anyway, Adam's project was the Tanks Project, which attracted a lot of attention, a lot of curiosity, and a lot of question marks in bubbles over people's heads, I think.
Yes, that was the intention.
Mm. Yeah. So we've already talked to Eric Stevenson, who is one of the people responsible for the tanks, and a driver, if you like, and an owner. I'm calling them tanks, but they're actually armoured personnel vehicles, weren't they?
Yes, to be accurate.
Yeah, but tanks is the word that everybody used to describe.
Yeah, tanks is the impression that they give.
Mm. So maybe you could tell us a bit about that project and what it was about.
Okay, all right. Well, it seemed like a good idea to... Claire Taylor, the curator, approached me to come up with an idea. I have lots of problems with public art because they tend just to end up being kind of objects that you bump into. I've been working with military equipment and ideas for a while, using them in domestic kind of arenas, and it just seemed very obvious to put a real tank in a real city, so that the city is the sort of canvas and the tanks are the sort of art object, primarily because my work, it does have a political dimension, and this year particularly, and pretty much forever and probably continuously, three quarters of the world continuously has the army present on the streets. And in our Western democracies, we're very lucky because we don't tend to have army, except in times of sort of natural disaster. We're not our army is here to sort of defend us, not to protect the government from us. So it just seemed an appropriate way of bringing home that idea that other people in other parts of the world aren't entirely safe, especially considering that we're all part of coalitions of the willing that seem to be prosecuting various international foreign policies on other people's streets. So our tanks aren't actually here, but Australian, British and American tanks are on other people's streets, frightening them. So it just seemed relatively fair to do the same to us.
And Was the idea for the tank project initially yours, or did you say that Claire Taylor, is it the curator?
Well, she asked me to come up with a project.
Uh-huh.
She knows my work, and she works with Peloton Gallery, who are one of the galleries asked to put forward proposals. So she approached me as one of the artists that she thought might rise to the challenge. So I hope I did that.
I guess philosophically, well, art, I suppose, only exists where there is a reaction. Is that the right thing to say? Like, would the tanks as an artwork in the laneways of inner Sydney work as an art object if you didn't actually have the reaction? Is the actual artistic moment in how people respond to them?
Well, I think it must be with art. Visual arts, obviously, there always tends to be an object. But, if you, from an old-fashioned point of view, I suppose if you're going around a gallery, that the art object doesn't actually work until the sort of eye meets it. So I suppose there is that moment where the art begins to comprehend what it's seeing, where the eye begins to comprehend what it thinks of the object in front of it. And I suppose that is art. That is the moment of it.
Did you witness the reactions to the tanks then? Did you follow them around at all?
Yes, lots. I took some footage, took lots of still shots, but also some video footage. And it was the best bit. I mean, that was what the whole plan of the project was. The moment, the unguarded moment that a member of the public would have on the first second. In fact, after, within a few moments, I think they probably started to rationalise various reasons why there might be tanks there. But it was that first few seconds. Some people just walked past on their busy day. Often people with mobile phones walk past because I don't think you're really looking at the world when you're on your mobile. But it was great to see. You only had to be there for a few minutes and somebody would be stopped in their tracks and have to walk around the vehicles and sort of touch them. That was a reaction often, I think, just to see if they were real.
Did they notice you filming them or photographing them?
Yes, but I tried to be relatively discreet. I suppose mostly I probably looked like just another member of the public kind of photographing the tanks.
So can you generalise about people's reactions or specific?
It's hard to say. The look on people's faces was one of mild surprise. And then after that, I suppose people's minds started to sort of rationalise. So from then on, it went into different directions, inquisitiveness mostly inquisitiveness. Some people thought they were a marketing device. That was a rumour that I heard. Somebody said, "Oh yes," somebody said that they're selling something. So that's probably a one thing they came up with. The tanks concerned are these armoured personnel carriers. They do have they are about 50 years old, so they did have a nostalgic kind of flavour to them. There was an Iraqi taxi driver that said a couple of years ago he was driving one for the Iraqi army. So he was fairly nonplussed. He wouldn't have been surprised at all to see them. But it was very nice to see that one person in 10 would just have to do this 360-degree walk around them and kind of touch them at some point.
And did people actually seek an explanation? Or could they seek an explanation?
Well, we had the Eric Stevenson and the two other personnel from the company that provided the tanks who were there looking after them. I mean, we gave them a small business card with some details on them, websites and things at the City of Sydney, so they could look up, gain more information on the project. But we tried to discourage those people from going into discussions of their own, because we really wanted the people's reactions to stay with them rather than for them to sort of stop thinking about it because they've been given a digestible explanation. Because I wanted people to sort of take away their thoughts as much as possible.
And were there any particularly unusual incidents? Eric told us about a few. I just wondered if you had some.
Well, I captured one guy. I was filming pretty much for when they first arrived. I was doing some filming, and there was one guy that over the course of about an hour, he just kept on appearing, reappearing, and he sort of he was ethnically Chinese, and he was carrying a shopping bag, so he sort of seemed to remind me of the shopping bag guy from Tiananmen Square. But every now and then he would do a few circuits of the tanks, and then he'd disappear, and then 10 minutes later he'd come back, and he'd walk around the tanks a couple more times and then disappear. And it was only looking at the footage later that he just kept on reappearing in the crowd. So he just seemed to be kind of mesmerised.
So you were unaware of his repeat visits at the time?
Well, I spotted him, but I didn't. Looking back at the footage, he was there the whole. He kept on coming back. He was there the whole time. Eric told me about some occasions that they had with party goers, and. On the weekend evenings, girls on girls' nights out seemed to be the most difficult to control, according to him. And they very much wanted to get inside the tanks, take photographs for their Facebook pages.
Uh-huh. That's interesting.
Yes, sort of social networking sites. I suppose you're always interested in a good photo opportunity in those circumstances. You've got to come up with something more interesting than everybody else's Friday night, which are kind of going to look the same, really, aren't they, mostly?
So doing the video footage and the photographs is part of documenting the project, but is it more than that? Like, is it actually part of the intrinsic artistic work?
I think no, the documentation is just purely for my records, really.
Oh.
Just a professional proof, really, that so people, you know, I can show curators what I've been up to. I think the project happened to the two people in that first few seconds. That was everything that I meant it to be. I mean, I'm still hearing some reports. A friend of mine, the father of a friend of mine, works in the city repairing telephones, and he comes into work very early, and he said he was walking past St. Martin Place, and one of the tanks appeared from one corner and drove right across the place, because they. Early in the morning, I think they just took the quickest route to their new site, and I regret that I wasn't there. I'd love to have got a bit of footage of that, but they didn't. They moved to a plan, but they moved under their own on their own time whenever they found a good opportunity.
Mm.
But I should have more dedicated artists maybe would have been camping out waiting for the best shots. But that would have been good. But I suppose there were other members of the public going to work early that also saw that and various other things. They used to move the wrong way down Pitt Street, I think, to get back to their new spot in the middle of the night. So all those things would have heightened the experience because they were sort of against the normal expectation of what happens in cities.
So the documentation, that will never appear on a website somewhere?
No, it will. It already is. It's on my website.
Mm.
I put it up under a chapter heading for Tank Project.
Mm. You've got lots of other interesting stuff on your website.
Yeah.
You've done a lot of interesting and very sort of thought-provoking projects. Would you like to talk about them a bit? You don't have to go into any detail, but I think the camouflage
suit experiment.
Suit, yeah.
Well, that's that was my last public art project before the Tank Project, and that was based. I was invited into a group show at Hazelhurst Regional Gallery, which is in Gaimere. And all the artists invited had a residency. They have a residency program. So before the show, I was there, and they have a cottage for a couple of weeks. And I'd made these. I was going to present these camouflage suits, which are all-in-one, homemade, domestic camouflage suits made out of normal domestic kind of curtain and fabric and various other kinds of things, using the principles of army camouflage. But the project itself was a response to the Cronulla riots, and
which were a major event a couple of years ago.
Which were a major event. Yeah, it was an ongoing project. It was two back-to-back shows. The first one being a year after, and this follow-up piece being 2 years after. So my piece, the camouflage suits, was, I think, about fitting in, being an outsider. I've been living in Sydney now 8 years, but I was working with the idea of camouflage being some way of kind of fitting in with your surroundings. But so with the suits that I made, I put on various suits and went to different sites, the beach at Cronulla and Gaimere train station, various other venues, and I'd find a little spot to hide in a bush or a bit of shadow, and then I'd be filmed for about 10 seconds. And then I just get up and sort of move out of camera shot. And I think the film worked very well. I edited the sort of 12 best or different diverse ones together. And it kind of turns into a bit of a Where's Wally sort of DVD.
It does. A very popular children's book of a few years ago.
Yeah, it was. I showed it in a gallery in Sydney a bit later, and I was able to watch people watching the film and sort of get that sort of surprise when they picked it. So I suppose there's a little bit of overlap there with the Tank Project.
Well, is that surprise element, is that a continuing theme in your work?
Yeah, well, I think artists should use all tools at their disposal to engage the audience in their work. I think that's what they always have done. But I think arts periodically falls into a sort of certain amount of historicization, and that people expect art to to look like art of ages past. But I'm sure in their day, those paintings were designed to be surprising and engaging when they were first painted as historical works. And so I don't feel that, you know, I just feel like I'm continuing that tradition.
So you've been an artist for quite a long time?
All my life.
All your life, in childhood too?
Yeah. No, I decided at 11. I think that was the first time I consciously said I'm going to be an artist.
Mm. And what attracted you to it at that age?
I could draw. I'm sure, I mean, it's very difficult to tell whether or not one thing leads to the other. Are you interested in drawing, or do you become interested because you're good at drawing? I mean, all small children are encouraged to do what they're best at, or at least they gain most praise from their parents. I suppose they give that thing high prestige in their psyche. So I'd love to know whether or not you're born an artist, or because you have achieved early success, you sort of become one. It would be too difficult for me to pick.
But drawing is certainly not a feature of the Tank Project, and
I'm not sure.
Can you tease that out a bit? How does it?
Well, it's probably drawing a bit of a long bow, but I'm in mapping. There was a lot of mapping involved. We downloaded some shots of the project area from Google, and with me and the curator, we spent quite a lot of time sort of mapping the possible movements of the tanks. I think you could say we were kind of mapping the city with the tanks, mapping the area of the project.
And thinking about the city sort of two-dimensionally, you mean, in the way that a drawing is two-dimensional?
Thinking of it three-dimensionally, but looking at a two-dimensional image, you know, from above. But drawings, I mean, has a similar quality to what I was just talking about with painting, which is there is a kind of drawing that looks like art, but drawings used to describe things, and that's the kind of drawing that interests me more anyway. Very, very quickly, or not very quickly, but after a while, you can, most drawers can gain a facility to sort of make an object look authentic or real with lots of sort of clever shading. But that's not the real use of drawing. I mean, I like all kinds of sort of pictorial representation, like Venn diagrams. Can you remember those from school?
Are they the multi?
Well, they're the circles that overlap, and then the overlapping areas are used to sort of represent topics that have multiple purpose. And graphs. I like graphs a lot. I mean, graph paper is nice. It's something about.
It's very ordered.
Well, I suppose so. I suppose so, but I collect graph paper. Is that a bit odd?
Probably not if you're a drafts person.
Yeah, no, I've got a big collection of different graph papers.
All different kinds, you know, different
grades
and different
ages.
Right.
Yeah, I bought some, when I was in France a couple of years ago, I bought some antique French graph paper. But they've definitely got a feel to them. I mean, you almost don't have to do any drawing because they've already started good.
And there are, I suppose, historically, they're a kind of a representation of how the world is perceived in some way. Is it like measuring instruments are, or am I getting a bit off the track there?
Well, I think, I mean, I obviously like them just for some strange aesthetic reason, but they're all those different tones and colours and sizes already have a meaning. I mean, when I'm using them in a drawing, you go and choose the one that's already heading towards the direction. I mean, some graph papers look more technical and sort of scientific, and others look more geometric. But maybe it's because I like them because they make the viewer think about the content of the work rather than give them the impression they're seeing art. I mean, I think one of the greatest things, the greatest problems with art is that people approach it already thinking they're going to see some, and so they put a different head on. What I enjoyed most about the tank project, for instance, was that nobody was expecting to see any art, so their reactions were true. I mean, I did tell all my fans and friends that the project was on, so I know people went specifically to see them, but I'm not sure that if they gained as much from it as the people that just came across them accidentally.
Mm.
So I think the trick with art is to get people to remove people from the idea that they're going to see some art. You know, it's too worthy. So I don't think they've got the right, they're not wearing the right sort of mindset.
It's not open, I guess, if they're anticipating art. It's not, I mean, what you were actually seeking in that project was people's more or less instantaneous reactions.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think the expectation of being educated sort of gives people a different mindset when they approach things.
Did you train formally as an artist?
Yes, I went to art college in Oxford in the UK in the mid 80s.
And so can I ask you what brought you to Australia?
I met a girl. I came here for a visit in 2001, and virtually the last day I was staying with a friend, introduced to my future partner.
Oh, I see. So here you are.
Yeah, I was on a bit of a trip, so I went on to New Zealand and thought I'd stop by Sydney on the way back just to see that girl again.
And
then I stayed 3 months and decided to move.
Mm. So can I ask if you're still together?
Yes, oh, yes, right. We are.
Only because it'd be interesting to know if you stayed for other reasons as well in the long run. I didn't ask you when you were born, but I probably should have in the beginning, if you don't mind telling me what year you were born.
1964.
So that makes you
44. Yeah.
Mm. So you've been practicing as an artist for quite a long time.
Yes, mm. Yes.
And can I ask just how you actually survive financially? I imagine your work is not something that actually gets sold particularly often. You might get funding and so on.
Yeah.
Am I right in thinking that?
Well, I mean, how artists survive I just don't really understand. I mean, there's certainly no money in it. I mean, it's nice to... I mean, this it's very nice to win a good commission like this, because it was well funded, but that's definitely not the norm. I mean, in my early days, before I had any kind of success, you're all completely self-funding. Most artists have three jobs. They have the day job that pays the bills. Then they're meant to be some kind of marketing person to market themselves and do all the sort of paperwork that's required. And then, of course, they have to find time, thirdly, to go away and actually do some art.
Has that been the case for you? Have you had to have a day job as well?
in the past. I mean, I'm still employed by the MCA as a preparator, an art mover. But the last few years, I've been fairly busy, and I've now been showing in a commercial gallery. So with a few sales and a commission this year for the tank project and the residency last year, just about have kept me going.
Mm. And that's the Peloton Gallery, is it? Is that the one you're talking about?
No. I show at a gallery, Gallery 9 in Darlinghurst, which is a commercial gallery.
Mm.
Peloton's an artist-run space. I mean, the situation in Sydney is there are certain commercial galleries that you show in, and I suppose they're primarily for money. But all the artists run initiatives. You can give you opportunities to do other things, maybe less commercial.
And a space to display them and so.
Yeah, and also give you more options to display, because commercial galleries tend to be quite rigid in how many times they can show your work.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a studio somewhere? You must
have.
We've
got a studio in Redfern,
uh-huh.
Which is a shared space. There's about 15 people. I'm looking to expand at the moment. I've got about 15 square metres and I need more, which is a good sign, I suppose.
Does it mean that you've got more work to do, or the scale is increasing?
Well, I've already got a permanent art storage. I mean, as you get more opportunities to show, you kind of accumulate more stuff. And every time you show 20 paintings, you might not sell everything. So you start to begin to sort of accumulate a back catalogue of stuff, which you're hoping that one day there'll be some kind of a run on it, and it'll be worth keeping.
Well, good luck with that one.
Cheers.
So, Glenn, perhaps we should talk a bit about how Adam came to be in Art and About this year. What was the process of selection there, and how does that all happen? It's a pretty complex organising thing, isn't it?
Mm. It was. A long lead-up time. Well, the year before, we in Art and About, there was another laneways project. But it was run by a different part of the organisation. Then the Lord Mayor established her public art advisory panel, and they took an interest in art and all things art in the city, and made the comment about the former laneways project, and then suggested an alternative for this year's project, which was to engage some of the artist-run spaces in the city. And so that's what we did. We put out an invitation to 12 of the artist-run spaces in the city. I think that was all of them at the time. And we got 10... we got responses from 10 of them, but that meant we actually got 21 different submissions. And then we had a subcommittee of the public art panel who came in, and we spent an afternoon assessing the 21 proposals and selected, I think it was 6... And that 6 were given another fee to develop their concepts. So Adam was one of the 6 initially, and along with the others, had to come back for a second round of submission. So the initial concept was presented, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm getting that right.
There's a written
proposal. There was a written proposal initially,
and then we had
some images. Yeah.
Another written proposal and an interview.
That's right, yeah. So,
a smaller number was selected from that.
So we ended up with 4 in the end, yeah.
So it's a fairly gruelling process.
Sure, yeah. Mm.
And what was it that was attractive about Adam's work to the committee and yourself?
Well, I should let you know who was on the committee, actually. Like, you know, important people like Leon Parossian, who's a former director of the MCA, and I think it was Felicity Fenner, who's a curator at Ivan Doherty, Brian Parks from Object Gallery. So those three, along with Eva Rodriguez-Restra, who's our public art officer, and myself. So there was five of us. And
Anne Loxley? What was that?
Anne Loxley, and Anne Loxley was on the panel as well, that's
and
right.
Who is she?
Anne Loxley's a curator at Penrith
Regional
Gallery and Lewis Bequest. Yeah, so we had to go through the 21 and eliminate them was quite a process, actually, because each, you know... they all had merits, you know, and all took on the challenge of the laneways and artwork in the laneways in various, you know, many different ways. And some things got eliminated because they seemed to, or more gallery based, and didn't really take on the aspect of dealing with the laneways and the laneway spaces. So that was a criteria that kept up popping up again and again. I think Adams was very strong because it's, you know, it's a very strong, you know, presence in the laneways, and the idea about these objects moving around the laneways was also very appealing. I think the initial proposal had a certain length of time, and I think we actually went back to Adam and said, "Can you stretch it out for a few more days?"
And
it was about having you know the right amount of presence in the city for the event, because the event's over 3 weeks, and so I think we ended up having the tanks in the city for 14 days. Was it close to 14 days?
It was just a question of stretching the budget, really.
Yeah, that's right. So,
just the cost of it with the, I mean, three men, 24 hours, and three tanks.
It's not cheap.
No.
Well, they're a business, aren't they?
They are a business. I mean, just they looked into... like a private security company would have charged just $14,000 just for the security alone. So it was very useful getting them, who were prepared to look after their own vehicles and sleep in them.
Mm.
So to double up on the kind of guarding and manoeuvring we were very fortuitous, I think, to find them.
I'm guessing here, but I imagine that then most of the money you got for the commission went into paying the people who were...
Yes, precisely.
Yeah. So you wouldn't have made much in income from it.
Oh, I paid myself a fairly good fee.
Oh,
I think.
Good. That's good. Since you're the artist.
Yeah. So, I mean, over the years, I mean, I started with very egalitarian principles but as you get older, you know, you have to actually sustain your practice, and whereas before you can kind of dance around giving it all away for free, you know, when as your commitments start mounting, you need to get paid.
Obviously, you have to eat and have a roof over your head and all the rest.
Well, and just the studio, running a studio and storage, you know, it all mounts up.
I think it was reflected in some of the other projects as well. So I think we made the point that the artist should give himself a fee. But some of the other groups worked very collaboratively and involved a lot of other people.
Yeah.
So they ended up using all their budget on materials and this and that, and didn't give himself the same amount of fee. We didn't prescribe the fee.
No.
You know? Some were over ambitious. Some budgets got stretched and not on the artist's fees.
It's sort of part of the whole complicated mechanisms of.
I think it's very nice to it's very nice to get a fee. You feel much more respected. It's
valued.
I mean, a lot of people make money out of art, and it's very seldom the artist. It's a huge industry, and the people right down at the bottom of it are the people that supply the work
and make the least.
And make the least. It's very strange. I mean, every other profession is run by senior members of its own profession. except for art, which is run by everybody else.
Mm. So maybe we should just talk a little bit about, I think we're probably drawing to a close, but a little bit about the function of public art. Maybe you, Glenn.
Okay.
I mean, number one, is there a difference between public art and private art? What's private art? Is it something that hangs on a gallery wall or is owned and viewed just by a small group of people, like a household, as opposed to something that's out there for any random person to see? Is that what public art is? On display for anybody to see?
It was noticeable with... I mean, I'm also a painter, and when you have a painting on the wall and somebody views it or appreciates it, I'd say that's generally a very personal experience, or fairly obviously. But with the camouflage suit experiment, even inside a gallery, watching the DVD was often two or three people would be in front of it at any one time, and they were kind of sharing the experience. So I suppose public art is more to do with it, with the shared experience than the personal. But I'm sure there's many other interpretations.
I think it has very democratic roots, you know, in statues and fountains and all those sort of traditional forms of public art, that the public could experience, you know, the heights of culture out there in the public domain.
Yeah.
And I think that hasn't changed too much. The artwork, the art form might have changed, but the notion of getting out in art in the public arena is, you know, bringing culture to the streets of the city
I'd agree, but I'd probably add that in the earlier days there was much more propaganda connected to it.
And that raises the issue of contemporary public art.
there probably is a propaganda side. I mean, you know, in the nicest possible way.
Yeah, I think public art these days has a lot of utilitarian use for we prescribe it for developers in major developments that they should put a piece of public art. And developers are often willing to do that because they see it bring a bit more, you know,
it's a bit more
prestige to their development. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, so there's it's double-edged sort of reason for using public art.
And I guess the public art that we're talking about in Art and About is not permanent, whereas a lot of public art is more or less permanent.
That's true.
Bond blows it up or something. But
this
is very ephemeral, isn't it? What?
And good. I mean, there was some very good aspects about the project. I think the lack of permanence is one of the best things, because otherwise public art tends just to be this lump that stays there forever. Good or bad, you know. Once the money's been spent, it's difficult to remove.
Mm. So the temperance allows it to be more about the idea.
I mean, presumably, if you repeat the project next year, you know, there's another opportunity, and then, you know, a continual opportunity. So, if projects like that progress, every generation will be able to have their own go at it, whereas we're surrounded by that kind of public art of previous eras, even when it's kind of lost all its value and in its original intent.
I think you have moments of more or less public art, actually. I mean, even in recent history, the public art panel is an example of the city's renewed focus on public art, and that hasn't happened since the Olympics. And so there's an instance of
2000,
the use of public art, you know, being to encourage tourism and you know, improving the quality of the city, you know, to attract people. But that was, that's right, that's 10 years ago now when a lot of those works were commissioned. And then before that, you'd be hard-pressed to sort of put your finger on the last major program of public art. It's sort of been quite ad hoc and often associated with development.
Are you working on any other public art projects at the moment?
No, I'm I'm trying to concentrate on some painting. Sort of my, wouldn't say it's my primary goal so much as my original kind of interest in art. Mm-hmm. So I sort of feel with the last 18 months or so, I haven't spent as much time on it as I'd like. So I just promised myself to spend next year painting.
Will you be using any graph paper in that?
Yes. I'll definitely use the same intention. I mean, probably not in the large canvases, but preparatory drawings and stuff. I've already got some drawings that are on graph paper that I'll be using to inform the paintings.
We probably should mention before we close also that you're at the centre of a controversy.
We don't
have to talk about it in detail, but
yeah.
It's the Warrnambool Art Gallery.
Art Prize.
Art Prize, beg your pardon.
Yeah.
And...
No, you're right. It is a Warrnambool Gallery, but...
They run the prize.
They run the prize, yeah.
And your work was selected as the winner, but then...
The camouflage suit experiment was selected by the appointed judge. But according to the judge, I mean, it's all none of it's secret because she's made a statement. She's a curator at the MCA, and she chose me, and the gallery director and the curator all agreed on her decision. And then the following day, according to her, the trustee who was putting up the money came in and said, "Oh, I don't want that to win," and then threatened the gallery director to withdraw the funding from the prize if he didn't change. And then the invited judge refused to change, so the only thing they could come up with is agreeing not to award a prize.
And
so it's all a bit strange.
Has anything happened subsequently? There hasn't been any resolution.
Well, no. I mean, they've the gallery just direct me towards the council, the Warrnambool Council, in correspondence, and refused to go into any kind of negotiation. So unless I actually am prepared to take them to court, I don't think there's very much I can do.
Mm. Ah, well, it may have given you a brief moment of fame that might help your other works, perhaps.
Well, maybe. That's all I can hope for. It's. I mean, prizes are. People don't necessarily. Artists don't necessarily agree with prizes, but they're one way of distributing money, and it's very galling to actually nearly win one. I wish I didn't know.
Yes, to win one and have it taken away.
Well, exactly, to get so close. I mean, to actually be obviously you'd like to think your work's good and that you might be there or thereabouts on a prize or two, but to actually make it across the line to be the win, you know, the one that particular judge really likes over the half dozen sort of good ones, I mean, I don't think that happens very often. So, I mean, I might have used up my chance for another 10 years, you know, or ever even.
Well, let's hope not.
But, yeah, same here.
Okay, thanks a lot to both of you.